Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to Dudes and Beer, episode 203. I am Chris Jordan, your host. With me tonight is our good friend, frequent guest, Billy Joe Kane of the Radical Empathy Foundation. He is a VR designer, does all kinds of design for the... I love the way you roll your eyes whenever I say that.
I always feel silly when people say all these things.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's what you do.
Yeah, that's true.
At one point in life, you didn't do that, so people didn't say these silly things.
I need to grow up and accept that.
I find the work of the Radical Empathy Foundation especially far from silly. The Radical Empathy Education Foundation, folks, is probably one of the most important things that I have come to associate myself and especially this show with. I can't thank you enough for always coming on the show whenever I call upon you, Billy. Mm-hmm. Whenever I see these stories in the news, it's one of those... I want this show to make a difference. I want it to make an impact. It's supposed to be hard conversations that we don't like having, like the conversation last week about the sonic attacks on the Cuban embassy and the Chinese embassy, and not only how our embassy members were attacked with this sonic weaponry, but Canadian members of the same embassy who have gotten zero medical help. They've been put under gag orders. They can't even go out and ask for medical help. It's wild. And the day that I got an email from a targeted individual because of talking to Dr. John Hall and someone who was asking for my help, it was like, wow. I can't just pitch softballs over the plate anymore.
No, there's no point in it. I mean, these are the things that they need to be discussed.
And that's just it. To see you and all of your hard work, January is awesomely and sadly enough, folks, Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And I say awesomely because good. It's something that we need to ragingly bring more awareness to in our society as humanity, not just American society, but society all over the globe. And in addition to that, it's something that is closer to home than you might think. I know you were recently on a great jaunt of expedition around the country. You've been on Fox 7 here locally.
Yep.
You've been all over the news. I want to say DFW, you went and did a news piece.
Not yet there, but we did Fox 7 here. When we did NBC while we were out in San Diego.
Okay, it was the San Diego one.
Yeah, and we're fortunate to get some airtime, yes.
Yeah, and you went out and took part in a great program with the school out there through the San Diego Trafficking Prevention Collective.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that and what the program is, because, I mean, hopefully this is a program that can grow through schools nationwide.
Yeah. So first, thanks for having me. And, you know, we're talking about human trafficking. One of the things that I unfortunately sometimes skip is, you know, trying to make sure everybody understands, you know, what human trafficking is. There's a divide between what some people will say is human trafficking and what really is human trafficking. So there are, at least by law definition, there is human smuggling, which is actually transport of a human being. And then there's human trafficking, which is, both of them are bad, but human trafficking
leads to the other.
One can lead to the other. That's correct. You could be smuggling.
They're mutually exclusive.
But yeah, as far as the law goes, they're mutually exclusive. Exactly. And I'm focusing myself on human trafficking because I want to make sure people know that this is real, you know, how it can happen. This happens in families. It's horrendous. So the definition of human trafficking, and of course you can dig into this very, a whole lot, but it's a form of modern day slavery in which traffickers use force, fraud, or coercion to control victims for the purpose of engaging in commercial sex acts or labor services against their will. And the two greatest forms, the most well-known forms, are either sex trafficking or labor trafficking. Essentially, people are being forced to do things against their will. And so we had the great fortune of having our program get picked up in a school just outside of San Diego. School's called VITA, which is the Vista Innovation Design Academy. It's a fantastic middle school. They're truly looking into the future, and the way they're treating their kids and their teachers are great. So they found our program and invited us out there to get started. And while we were there, we had the opportunity to speak with the Trafficking Prevention Collaborative, the collective that was put together for San Diego, and was really pushed by their district attorney, Summer Steven. And so they had just announced last Tuesday that they had gotten a $3 million grant from UBS, the bank, to get behind this effort. And what they're doing is they're putting in three different programs inside of their school systems to basically educate kids at different grade levels. And I don't want to go into all the details, but basically they're really focusing on educating teachers and children about this. California passed a law that made it mandatory for all children to at least have some type of education about this. And this is an actual program they're really using in San Diego. And the law is across all of California. So it's they're very progressive, if you will, that making sure everybody understands this, and they're trying to get accurate information out to people. And we're super excited that we had the chance to do that.
Yeah, and what an incredible opportunity. I know that you said while you were there that you were witness to an incredibly moving part specifically. Ooh. Where out of the 20 kids that participated, two kids actually wanted to stay around and talk after.
Yeah.
Because they'd recognize signs of what their friends had gone through.
Yeah. So, yeah, thanks. I'm glad we had a chance to talk a little before about this, so I can kind of get mentally prepared to discuss this with everybody else. So when we went out there to get our program started, and our program is called One Generation, and the idea of our program is to educate people about, well, first make them aware that human trafficking is real, then teach them what human trafficking is, and then beyond that, to try to get them to make a difference inside of their neighborhood and be able to recognize it. So our program uses three phases. The first phase is a virtual reality experience that puts you in the shoes of a victim. The second phase is educational materials that teach you, you know, what is trafficking, what's sex trafficking, what's labor trafficking, and it uses the VR experience to raise empathy and get people more interested in the topic. And then the third phase is a changemaker program, which gets kids, engaged in their community to continue raising awareness. But so the VITA school had us come out and get started. And so during the day, we taught maybe about 12, 15 teachers. And then at the end of the day, we had about 20 students come in, and it was a mix of girls and boys. And they all had a chance to go through the virtual reality experience. And it's a very, very personal, intimate experience. So you're not like doing this as a group. You put a headset on and you're kind of transported to this other world where this girl is telling you the story of how she was trafficked. So she met a boy online. He convinced her that he loved her. There's just a ton of details about this. She met him online, which is a very common way that somebody convinces you that they love you. So when these kids were having this experience, so a group of kids were watching it through a monitor. And then when the person would wear their headphones or the headset, they would be having this very, very deep, intimate experience with this, with the girl that's inside of the VR headset. And with that happening, it really kind of brings the wall down for you. You're not thinking so much about being defensive. You're not, you're really able to just like relax and go with this thing. So when the kids would get finished, they were touched in some way. They had an emotional reaction to this. So after all the kids were done, about eight of them stayed in the room with us, and it was really emotional because they were telling each other stories, you know, about how, you know, I guess life made them feel, how they felt about society and men, and how, you know, they'd been, you know, put into places they were uncomfortable. And two of them told stories about, I guess, trafficking that actually had hit very close to them. One had a friend whose stepfather was trafficking her. Oh, wow. And you know, when these are middle school kids that are telling these stories, and this is a random sampling of of 20 kids that came in. And that's just, I mean, it's devastating to think about, you know, what was that young girl's life like? Because her mother obviously loved this man, got married. She was in this family, and then this horror just happened to her.
Well, not just that, but I think the fact that it was a random sampling of student body mm-hmm. that came in and experienced it.
Yes.
And out of that 20 students, 8 stayed to talk. So
that's
eight,
right.
I mean, and,
they had
and
a big impression. Something happened.
I spent years working with 7th to 9th graders and upper high school students doing mm-hmm. confirmation, things like that, working in small groups.
Right.
And if you can reach 8 out of 20, you're shooting some great numbers there to begin with. If you're hitting that many with such a deep topic where it wasn't just like, oh, you know, I was expecting more of a video game. Where if 8 out of 20 went, wow, I want to talk about this.
Oh, they needed to talk.
And then not only that, but to have 2 out of 20.
Oh, the other
just
one.
Just do that quick math, people. That's 10%.
Yeah.
To have 10% of the kids that went through this experience know somebody that had that experience.
Yeah, the other one. Yeah, the other one that told the story, I don't want to repeat, honestly.
Yeah.
But the fact that, as you're saying, random sampling of kids that were brought out of their classes, they didn't like sign up to do this thing. Then the ones that had, I guess, either had the time, you know, or the inclination in time decided to stay. And to hear, their stories were just intense. And so for a while it was like, okay, we'll just stand here and talk. And then after a while I was like going, these kids need to talk. And we sat down and we had about an hour and a half worth of just like the most open heart-to-heart communications I think I've ever had with, you know, a group of, you know, kids. And I don't think those kids all knew each other very well, but man, by the time we were done with that thing, it was a moment. I think those kids never going to forget that for the rest of their lives.
That's beautiful. And that's kind of the idea, is to cause that radical empathy. There's a reason that your foundation is called the Radical Empathy Education Foundation.
We want people to feel this very real topic. You know, because if you don't feel, I mean, if you're going to sit there and you're going to, you know, read a handout or get a PowerPoint shown to you, I mean, that's just, I'm sorry, man, people are going to keep those walls up. They're not going to be listening, but when you can get them to really care about the material, they're going to listen and they're going to be willing to learn.
Well, and that's what I found very interesting about Trapped, a VR detective story, which is the software that you're using.
Correct.
It's excuse me, I guess game-esque. It's not really a game. There's no reward for how far you get.
True.
There's
my wife calls it learning in 3D.
Yeah.
And she refers to it as a game because you collect story pieces.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the better way for me to frame it.
Okay.
It's a completely interactive narrative experience.
Yep.
Where you learn more about the story of this young girl by going and collecting, I don't know, story cubes may be one way to look at it. But it's very simple to use. You just look at objects and you activate them.
I attended a lot to Myst.
Yeah.
Where you walked around, you solved a puzzle, and you learned knowledge as you solved the puzzle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's because it's such a personal experience and you can make decisions within it, and you may dig more into one particular topic or think of something of interest, you have the ability to, you know, kind of give yourself a moment to process something and then, you know, continue on.
Yeah.
And that's a really powerful thing, giving a user that kind of agency.
Yeah. And even to start to give people the understanding, the real world common understanding. I was showing you earlier, Billy, I've got them pulled up here, but if you're part of the Dudes and Beer Facebook group, all of these posted within the last week, every single one of them. I was like, man, you know, I've got a pretty good head for what I've put on the group. A lot of the times, folks, just so you know, people are like, wow, you put a lot of stuff on the group. I'm like, yeah, a lot of that is so that I don't lose it. So come an episode, I can be like, I this on the group.
It's so hard to keep track of all the things that are happening.
All I have to do is literally go to the Dudes and Beer Facebook group and look up AI. Boom. And there's all the articles that I posted about AI. So it's like, I know I posted this. I know it was there.
It's got to be somewhere.
So I basically turned Facebook and the Dudes and Beer group into its own search engine for this kind of stuff, folks.
That is a really good idea.
You know, just so that, like, it's compiled somewhere. It's great if it starts conversation. I think it's more important to have it all as one compendium where you can go and just hot source search it rapidly.
Pro tip. And use Facebook as your own bookmarks engine.
That's right. But within from the 27th to the 1st, the news was Corey Feldman shopping a documentary on sex abuse in Hollywood at Sundance. There was a huge YouTube video that was released about a group fighting hard to combat sex trafficking, of course, during Super Bowl 53, as well as a News 11 Atlanta piece that came out on the 28th about several teens that had gone missing, found at local hotels, being used for sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. A faith healer that had millions of followers, ran a sex slave farm, and sold babies to the highest bidder. Ahead of Super Bowl 2019, 33 arrested in sexual trafficking sting. And then, of course, the FBI talking National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month for the month of January. And that's just in 1 week. That's just in 1 week's news.
Yeah, and that's a pretty broad set of topics that are all kind of under the same umbrella. And that's at
least one story a day.
Yeah.
One story a day coming out about human trafficking.
Big enough. Those are big stories.
Yeah, that's just it. Big enough to have made national headline.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that there is more out there than that. You know, and that it goes deeper than that, that it goes, like Corey Feldman says, into the depths of Hollywood. Good God, Bryan Singer was just accused again.
We were talking a little bit earlier about how, you know, these are things that people see, and mm-hmm. it's pretty obvious that this is happening. Yet this problem, you know, is everywhere. I mean, this is happening in families between, you know, husbands and wives, and people don't even realize this is happening to them. This problem is just, it's endemic, unfortunately. And these are the big lights that get shined on a few of these things. And, you know, it's everywhere, dude. Unfortunately, it really is.
Yeah, it is. It is the ugly face of humanity.
I hate it. I mean, I didn't expect that this was the world I was going to uncover.
Yeah.
But wow.
And, you know, you got into this for some pretty personal reasons yourself. You know, I mean, you've shared the story of how you found your own children being groomed.
Yeah. That term right there, just groomed. I mean, that is that's a term that you don't really walk out of high school with or intermediate school understanding. And I didn't even know what it meant. And basically, grooming is a form of normalizing I guess discussion of like different types of behaviors that are not considered to be, you know, appropriate. For example, you know, talking about sex at an early age, trying to, you know, I mean, I could go on and on, but what was happening for us is we had a friend. It's a
base of normalization.
Exactly. So we had a friend who was basically trying to normalize having conversations about sex or my children's body parts with them. And they fortunately told me about it before something bad happened. And that's when we found out from the police that's called grooming.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know how else to tell people about this, but please look up that word and do some research, because people can, they can normalize behavior very easily. And an example of normalization might be that, let's say for instance, that my family, when I'm a kid, my family's yelling all the time. Well, to me, that seems normal. If a friend comes over and they experience that and they have a caring, loving, calm family, they come over and they're like, oh my gosh, what is going on? Why are you guys yelling at each other all the time?
Yeah.
But if they keep coming over, they start thinking that that's normal. It's like, mm-hmm. well, no, dude, that's not normal. It might be, quote, normal for us, but that's not right.
Yeah.
And so then when that becomes talking about sex and talking about all sorts of other things.
Leaving magazines laying around in reach, having things up on the internet whenever they come into a room.
Yeah.
Something as simple as that.
Yeah, it basically just it wears somebody down, and the further worn down they are, the easier it is to manipulate that person.
Yeah. And, you know, I came across that.
Oh, and pornography is something that is like, if you have kids that are watching pornography, all of a sudden, you know, talking about sex is completely normalized. And I mean, these little phones right here, there is nothing on this phone or any screen that is going to stop your kids from being able to see that stuff. So as a parent, you just have to stay involved.
No. And that's just it. That's really the biggest part. Even before I was a parent. That's the advice that we gave parents, and it killed me all the time, working with junior high students and seeing parents basically just dump them off and leave. They would never come into the dance and see how many adults were there versus how many kids or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was one of those like, wow, really? That's kind of frightening that there is just such a state of oblivion there that, you don't actively want to get out and check on that kind of thing.
Well, you know, let's drill into that just a little bit. I like where this conversation is going. So on the one hand, I mean, there's just a big spectrum, but on the one hand, you got people that are not necessarily that interested in their kids that may, you know, kind of dump them off at a dance, for example.
Sure.
And then there are other people that are so busy, they may be working 2 to 3 jobs.
Yep.
You know, this is an economic, you know, scenario too. So it's like they may be working a whole bunch of jobs and they can't stop to take their kids. It can't even take their kids. The kids have to go there on a bus or walk there, you know, as well. So it's like, you know, this. And maybe they are the people that dropped the kids off and they actually went inside. I mean, anything can happen to anybody, but the more time that you're not looking at your kids, I guess, that you're not engaged with them, the higher the risk is.
Yeah.
Of anything. But I mean, this particular issue is just super difficult.
Yeah. And not only that, as opposed to anything else, it can exist with almost no outward sign.
None. None at all.
I mean, until it gets to the point of depression, something like that, where it's racked somebody for years.
Oh my God. That reminds me. Excuse me for interrupting.
Go ahead. No.
So at that school again, where we had our random sampling of kids, we also had our random sampling of teachers. Mm. And one of the teachers, explained that, that she had a student that had come in with, you know, way too much cash, and she was buying things for the students and teachers. And she was like, she goes, I should have understood what that could have been. And as she looks back on it, you know, I've had situations where I know I look back on life, I'm like, that person was probably being trafficked. It's like, again, random sampling of people. Who would have thought? And this common thing is happening all over the place. I mean, this is not just, you know, we're not being invaded by Mars or anything. I mean, this is happening inside families, inside schools, inside homes, inside malls. It's everywhere. I hate it. I hate that it's even true that I have to think like this.
Yeah.
But
it's, and you know, it is one of those situations in society where, you think it's by everybody's choice. You assume the fact that everybody you see standing on a street corner is there by choice. You assume the fact that even everybody dancing at a club is there by choice.
I think we talked about that previously. I was in Portland working with a group of police that were putting up fake ads online, not to like arrest people, but to try to get a chance to educate them, which is a pretty advanced thing, you know, because most people are like, oh, let's just arrest everybody. But what they described to me was something, and it blew my mind. It is what they call the illusion of choice. It makes perfect sense when you hear it, but the idea is that we have been programmed either by society or, you know, our own, I don't know, trying to get away from guilt scenario. We just convince ourselves, nope, that person chooses to be X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
Chooses to be homeless, chooses to be uneducated, chooses to be selling their body for sex, chooses for those things to happen. And that helps us protect, you know, our, I guess, of self-worth or something like that. But it's what's happening. So these buyers, the demand side of this particular equation, which is where all the money comes from, they have convinced themselves that this is okay. They've convinced themselves that these people are doing
Super
this.
Super Bowl, it only happens once a year.
Exactly. We're celebrating. You know, they love partying.
Everywhere.
Yeah. We're partying.
Yeah.
It's like, no, dude. No.
Yeah.
It's not that way.
Yeah. And, it really is some of it turning a blind eye to the fact that that could be the possibility. To normalize ourselves and to get to a point where maybe we can even accept what's going on.
I do want to add this, that I do believe, I know for a fact that there are people that do choose to do this work.
Sure.
100%. I completely support their decision as long as it is in fact their decision. Work is work. Sex work is work. It really is. And, although everybody doesn't want to hear it that way, it is.
Yeah.
Some people choose it because it actually allows other human beings to have a human interaction. I mean, there are some people that, for example, they may be physically impaired, for example, and they never have any type of human touch whatsoever. And, they just need to be held. And that's a very real thing. It's a human need. People need to be held and touched. So, I would never want people to think that that I believe that everyone is doing this type of work is bad. I don't. What I believe is that if people are being forced to do this, that's bad. And they need to be able to have the information to start really thinking about, am I doing this because I want to? Or am I doing it because my husband is forcing me to?
Well, and
there's all sorts of weird manipulations.
Well, not only that, but you even get into just the straight up weird manipulation of the mind to begin with. The mind, the endocrine system, the endorphin system, the same way that you do with drug addiction, things like that. And there is a point spiritually with an addiction, just before the point of demoniac possession, called demoniac obsession, where a person literally starts doing things that are not intrinsically themselves in order to satisfy base need. And
wow, I got some learning to do on that.
That's just like from a spiritual demonological point of view, you've literally surrendered your free will to something in order to gain something else.
That is fascinating, because I think you're describing something that is it's a system, actually, and it's been identified, and they put a name on it, right?
It's what normalizes people to stealing from their parents to get drug money. Okay. Things like that, things that you know are bad that you intrinsically would never do if you weren't doing that. But doing that for so long has warped your sense of good and evil to the point that that's normal now.
Makes sense. Yeah, exactly. I'm not stealing, I'm just taking money from my parents.
Yeah.
I'm not a thief.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very much the same dangerous point of view, where if somebody's been doing this for years and been made to do it, it just becomes a point of normalization where, why would I not do that? Even if I'm free from that person, why would I not keep doing that? That's what I do.
Yeah.
And that's what's scary. And that's what I've seen is probably the hardest part to break for a lot of people. The people that I know that started dancing because they owed somebody money, started using and doing that with themselves because they owed somebody money or something like that. And then it snowballs and goes somewhere else. And before you know it, you're doing it, quote unquote, of your own free will. But it didn't start out that way.
Yeah, I'm sure you agree with me on this. I just want to make sure that people don't come off as even thinking for a second that I'm like, no, sex is bad. You shouldn't do any of that stuff.
No.
Or that everyone that does it is being victimized. It's not the case. But it is definitely an indicator that you should take a look inside yourself and figure out why it is this is going on. Because I've had friends that have told me, I did not realize I was being trafficked. And you're like, you got to be kidding me. And then when they do that self-reflection, they're like, yeah, I was never educated to know that there was such a thing as grooming, such a thing as normalization. I didn't realize that I was at this young of an age and I was, you know, impressionable, and I thought those things were okay. And these, you know, like with our program,
everybody learned about it then.
Right. Exactly. So that's kind of with our program. We want to get kids to give them the information so that they can actually be armored against this, and they can see that this is happening to them, or they can actually have some self-reflection and try to find a way to get some help.
Well, and it's absolutely phenomenal that y'all have been welcomed into schools the way that y'all have. I think especially now with San Diego under y'all's belt. Yeah. I think you got to reap some pretty beautiful reward there.
I mean, the trip
for the students.
Yeah, the trip there was already worth it. Just having just a chance to talk to those kids that really needed to untangle that part of what was going on in their mind and their lives and how they were feeling about, you know, their gender and their sexuality and how they fit into society and how, you know, having this extra information really, you know, put some stuff into perspective for them.
Yeah, it really does. I mean,
they're having these problems.
Yeah.
They're going to have them on their own, or we're going to have some professionals talk to them about it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's gotten strange in schools between students. Like we said a while ago, the normalization, the almost expectation of sexual things.
Oh my gosh!
In junior high and high school,
That was a big topic with these girls.
I used to teach.
Yeah, you know,
sexuality with seventh graders, and it was much more the understanding of yourself as a sexual person.
Right.
Than any kind of sex ed, like what schools taught.
Yeah.
Trying to understand the fact that these things are normal to feel. It's different if you act out on them. You know, you can't go around talking to girls that way. And girls, you can't go around expecting this from young boys. And it's strange, the expectation that comes from both sides, but the pressure that happens just amongst themselves, not even from outside.
It's as real as it gets.
Yeah. And I'm sure you, as a parent of somebody that age, has seen it more than once.
We've had plenty of conversations with the kids and their friends, and you know, found out that even though there is the internet with all of the information, they still did not know how sex worked. They still did not understand how pregnancy worked.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so I've kind of, this is sort of a meta issue, which is that, you know, we always talk about we're the Bronze Age or the Gold Age or the Stone Age or whatever. And then we've been in the information age, right? So I have this weird thought, which is that, okay, right now there's just too damn much information.
Yep.
And so now somehow we have to
got missed.
Right. I believe, and this is, I don't know how many people talk about this. This is my thought. We need to enter the age of wisdom where someone is curating that ridiculous amount of information and turning it into something that somebody can actually learn from. Like you see, you know, when you meet you see an apprentice go to a master, you know, the apprentice has all this information and the master teaches them how to assimilate that information, whether it's, you know, what they learn how to do or, you know, whether it's a skill that they learn. But no one is aggregating this information to turn it into wisdom yet. I don't have the answer, but I can tell you that we're beyond the age of information. It's just like, it's just a deluge.
Yeah.
So how do you sort through it?
Well, and that's a big part of it because, and one of the things I've tried to do on this show is get back to the point of like scientific method. Remember, there's a step.
You have an idea, theory. Then you test it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
there's something called a hypothesis, and that's what I'm throwing out. I'm not throwing out conspiracy theories. Here's a conspiracy hypothesis.
Yeah.
Prove or disprove it. That's the job now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is the thing, right? I mean,
theory means it's already an accepted form of thought, like the general theory of relativity. It's not fully proven yet, but it's a pretty well accepted form of thought. We've done quite a few experiments and we've got a really good idea.
It would be interesting to see
once we pass that, then it's like gravity. That's a law.
Yeah.
That pin dropped.
Law of gravity. That's right.
That's a law now. Like, mm-hmm. we can prove that mathematically.
I think it will be interesting if we can get people to start calling things conspiracy hypotheses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know? So it's like, yeah, just stop watering down the word theory. Yeah. Theory is a very important, it means something word, and you just keep ruining it every
time. That's right.
That's right.
You're just peeing all over science.
You're ruining science
every time.
Stop hurting science. Do you realize you were? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You're hurting science. Science says, ouch.
Wow. The dude had really gotten very uptight in thinking about this situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he did.
And that's just it. I think that we have stopped thinking outside the box as a society. Because of all this information, because of the information deluge, you don't even want to think outside the box. Good God, man, think of what the torrent of information is like if you do think outside the box and read sources
other
than what you trust.
It is a lot easier to look at that box that's in your room that's talking at you all the time and just believe what that thing tells you.
It is.
It's really easy to do that. Easy. And it also doesn't make you have a lot of giant fights at Thanksgiving with your family if you all just agree with the box.
Yeah.
You know, everybody just get along, just do what the box says. The box says this, and you know, and then, well, think about it. It is. And then you have one family that watches one side of the box, another side of the box. And it's like, guys, man, the whole thing is messed up. You're being sold a story, and you're going along with it because it's easy.
Yeah.
It's easy to think about. It's easy to just use those little snippets. So this concept again, of Mike, you know, the information age, the wisdom age. Well, We're getting the common wisdom pushed onto us, and I'm like, I don't think those guys are the ones that should be teaching us.
Yeah, no, most definitely, and we really do have to learn to filter information. We have to learn how to take in more information without getting harmed by the information, feeling like we're attacked by information. Feeling like information is attacking our paradigm or our way of thinking.
I was just watching a piece the other day that was talking about when you are confronted with information that you have to that questions your basic beliefs,
yep,
that you actually have a physical reaction.
Fight, flight, or freeze.
Right. Well, I have a friend that throws another F one in there, yeah. If that's what's happening when you hear information that is counter to the wisdom that you have heard or information you've heard, and that causes you physical pain, well, what are you going to do? You're just going to go run right along with what the little box tells you. It's like, ooh, it's much easier for me to not argue with anybody. And that's just society's not going to succeed if we all just agree with one side. It's like, no, dude, you need to perform some hypotheses and test the hypotheses and test other versions of it until
poke
you
around
find
at it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Find out what the truth is.
It's okay to poke around.
Yeah. Don't let people tell you that what you're looking at with your own eyes isn't true. And that goes back to a lot of the things we've been talking about. It's like going, if you think this is wrong, see something, say something, do something, you know, question your reality.
But don't, whatever you do, don't be angry at a point of data.
No, of course not. Data is data.
Data is data. It's blind. It's just data. Take it as data.
I have a tip that I give people while I'm, I've been a software manager and a project manager for years, and I read this one book called How to Make Meetings Work. And the book was thick and useless, except that it had this one piece of great information in it. And what it said was, when you have a meeting with people, and I have a thing I want to push, and you have one that you want to push, we're looking at each other across the table, right? And so I bring up my idea, and it's mine, and I own it. And then you have yours, and then we almost have this battle where I am the idea, you're the idea. Well, this book says, look, put it on a whiteboard, and everybody face the whiteboard, like in a semicircle, because then those just become, as you say, points of data.
That's right.
Put it up on a wall. It's now not personalized. It's like something that has to be looked at on its own.
That's right.
And that has changed the way that I think about almost everything. So when I sit here and I think I'm holding this fact, and if you argue about it, I'm going to have a heart attack about it or get really upset. And again, fight or flight. If I can put it over there and you and I can both look at that as the issue, it helps so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's helped me with my communication with human beings too. Interpersonal relationships with my wife and everybody else. I'm like going, okay, I gotta, this shouldn't be about me.
Yeah.
It's about the fact that the car's engine doesn't work, or I didn't put enough gas. And it's like going, yeah, I made a mistake, but look, we've got to deal with this thing.
That's right.
You know, whether it's putting more gas into it, or, you know, yeah, if I need to have some self-introflection as to why I did that, okay, let's do that. But it's not just me trying to defend myself.
That's right.
It was such a huge breakthrough for me to figure that stuff out.
It makes a big difference when we're all animals inside. Corner any animal.
Yeah, and we run off patterns that have been developed for
millennia.
Yeah, exactly.
Thousands of years to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the scariest fact of all is that our brain is actively a negative feedback machine. Like, it learns more from
mistakes.
Yeah. You learn more from a mistake than from touching fire.
You know,
than you do from the thousands of times somebody said, fire's hot, don't touch it.
Right. And there's another one, right? So it's like if you look at a wall that's been perfectly painted, right? You look at that wall and you're like, wow, that's fantastic. And what your brain notices is what? That little spot that got missed.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what?
Nice tape line.
I know, exactly. You know, oh, you missed a spot, you know, whatever. So it's like, it's when things are right, you don't notice it. But when something's wrong, like you notice the pain and you notice the differences, which is why you can stand there and like all of a sudden out of the corner of your eyes, a roach moving, and you go, oh my God, that's a roach. Because your brain's kind of compressing all the other stuff, but the thing that's different is what it's trying to pick up. I mean, our brains are really cool.
Yeah.
You know, they can trick us, but that's how we survive, is those things being wrong. You know, we have to recognize them.
And this is the part of the episode, folks, just so you know, if this is your first episode tuning in with Billy Joe Kane from the Radical Empathy Education Foundation, this is the part of the episode where we don't necessarily go off rail, because we've talked about the absolutely important facts of human trafficking, the dangers behind that, the ways that we can help in our community and to bring awareness to it. Now is the point where we normally get into technology and what's going on with technology. And just talking about this right now brought into my mind the article that I posted up the other day on the Facebook group, where an AI beat two of the best StarCrafters.
Holy moly.
Yeah. It's begun now, folks. Like, we already had it where an AI passed the Turing test about a year and a half, 2 years ago, where it was the first time that a human being responding or talking to a computer had responses human enough and fast enough that the human thought it was talking to a human on the other side of the screen, that the respondee on the other side of the monitor was a human being, where it was like, how is the weather today? Oh, it was sunny. You know, it was really nice out, and it was actively sunny. You know, it wasn't just some canned response. Mm-hmm.
The weather was 68 degrees.
Where it was like a casual conversation. And that was the first time that humanity was fooled by a computer. But we had the Kasparov situation many years before that, where, of course, Deep Blue beat
Gary Kasparov,
mm-hmm. One of the world's best chess players. We had Watson right up around the same time.
He won Jeopardy.
Yep. A couple times.
That's true. Yeah. And he beat the biggest, too.
Against Tournament of Champions.
Yeah.
For the first go-round.
So I'm assuming that, you know, the audience pretty much knows what StarCraft is, but I'm going to go ahead and make the leap and say that they don't.
Get nerdy with it.
I'm going to get a little nerdy with it. So if you can imagine that checkers, you think a couple of moves ahead, right? And there's rules that go along with checkers. And then you have chess, which has like a bazillion possibilities. And you think quite a number of moves ahead. And then you also have Go, and people have, and that has trillions of moves. And then Go has now had a computer that's been able to beat the best Go players. But StarCraft is a really fascinating I didn't know this.
Very interactive.
It is. World. It's like chess and Go and everything, except always constantly running, and it's going very, very quickly. Some of the best StarCraft players in the world have this thing they call a
CPI, like clicks, is it CPS, clicks per second.
Yep.
So it's, so they play the keyboard like a piano and their hand is moving over the keyboard like, you mean like nothing you've ever seen. And you can watch some of this on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then they're clicking with their left hand and of course they're moving a mouse around. So the CPMs, apparently the number they want to hit around is like 220 to 250. So it's like, because that's like a, this, that's a competitive level. They go too fat, too far than that. It's like too much. So yeah, no, dude. Olympic level StarCraft.
The system.
Yeah. And it's just, yeah, it's too much. So you have to think on like multiple levels at the same time. You've got strategic and you've got tactical and you've got to react to what other people are doing.
You've got the inventory.
Yeah. And you act on what's called a fog of war. You can't see what the other person is doing until you send a little scout out to see it. So like if you imagine you're playing chess with like 300, you know, units that all had different skill abilities because you built them that way. And yet you couldn't see the other person's chessboard. I mean, and then personality comes out in a play. You might be aggressive one time and you may not be too aggressive. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I knew it would happen eventually, but wow, that's, and then if you think about that, take that StarCraft AI that beat the people and now put that in charge of a real world battle.
Scenario.
A real world scenario.
Yeah.
They would outperform, outthink, and they also don't sleep.
So how, but do you think we'll get to the point of Whopper? Do you think we'll get to the point of war games where there is a computer running the situation?
Oh, you mean running it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the thing.
Where like the decision to launch has been put into a computer system.
Let's pretend, that human beings were going to, follow this and play. They're going to play nice. Right. Dude, we know better than that. I hate it, but I mean, yeah, eventually someone's going to do that. It's going to seem like a good idea to let a drone make some decisions on its own, and then pretty soon it'll be a good idea to, you know, kind of maybe let's go ahead and give it a
autonomous drone.
Let's give it a rubber bullet, you know, and then let's do this next thing. And I mean, I have more faith in humanity, but at the same time I've watched a lot of things that
I have no doubt in the stupidity of humanity.
Yeah, they just keep making more stupid.
Don't get me wrong.
So let me ask,
there's no depths. There is no end to the fathomable depths of stupid for humanity.
So let's do this. So frame up your question a little bit more for me so I have a more solid ground to stand on. Do you think we're going to give the power of life and death to a computer?
Do you think that we will get to the point where like all strategic decisions are given to a computer, such as like a Skynet or a Whopper, where it's like, okay, now we are using this computer to analyze all of the threats coming against us and whether or not to launch militaristic means to end them?
The answer should be no, but I mean, I have
my
concerns.
You're accounting for stupid, though. Of course.
There's no accounting for stupid.
Yeah, no, that's
I mean, it's the wild card that's there, because even if let's say you had it on a small scale, let's say that you had this one AI that was, I mean, think of the world as risk, right? So if you have one little tiny country and then they have this, they're running this AI and they can actually do predictive analysis, they're reading social media, they know when to shut the internet down so people don't actually have rebellions, so they can quell all these things, they can produce. I mean, like right now you have AI that's writing stories. They can write
sports things.
Dude, wait till they start, you know, performing coups on people and shutting down oil production, and they decide who they're going to promote to be on there, and they push what's news is going to be on and what news isn't going to be on. And I mean, automated, not like what happens now. And we know this has been happening since from time. But if you have an AI that has learned how to manipulate people like that by making a bazillion incorrect things, yeah, dude, one AI in a small place could technically cause enough havoc to cause a big problem and then just get bigger. Now, am I psycho and worried about that? No.
Yeah.
But in a potential dystopian future, sure. Why not?
Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong, folks. We have a long, long way of going, even for programming AI to get anywhere to the point of an AI hating people, wanting to bring harm to humanity.
Of course.
Anything like that. Now, granted, there was like the Microsoft AI that they had on Twitter that they had to shut down.
24
like,
hours, wasn't it?
With a
12 hours? I don't know how much it was.
It was alive for like 24 hours.
A learning neural network that was taught essentially whatever it was taught, it learned.
Yeah.
And the internet taught it. So you can pretty much guess the results.
Yeah. Well, Twitter specifically taught it.
Twitter is.
It was learning from the conversations on Twitter, and it became like radicalized rapidly.
It did. Well, you mean, I know that this, I don't know how out there it sounds, but I mean, whoever is programming your AI, whoever is doing the programming, their personal take on the world is going to happen. I mean, you're going to have that trolley problem eventually. So it's like, who are you going to run over? Are you going to do this? Are you going to run over a group of old people or a couple of young people?
You hope it's like a Michio Kaku or something, you know, some benevolent person that's programmed it.
And even then it's like, well, then if, you know, at that point, you're going to be charged with murdering four people or murdering six people. And would it be the programmer?
The issue I see right now is we have still yet to figure out who's at fault whenever a friggin' automated car hits somebody. And that happens pretty regularly.
That's true.
And there is a person right there. So I'm sure that there would always be somebody there at the command console to be able to say, hey, computer, don't launch that thing. That's unconfirmed information.
However, a human that did that, actually prevented a missile strike a while back.
Yep.
I can't remember the exact
words. It was just declassified not too long ago. It was a Russian guy.
Who was like, I don't think they would do that.
Yeah.
And so he just didn't turn the key.
Yeah, he just didn't push the button. He was like, yeah, sorry, I don't think that's like a valid report, dude. That just doesn't make any kind of sense whatsoever, God, Commander.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. That guy was a hero.
That was just declassified all of like 2-3 months ago.
That guy was a hero, man.
Yeah.
Total hero. Unsung hero.
And, you know, there is no doubt that computers are wrong. Models are wrong.
Yep.
It happens.
That's right. You know? I don't live my life worrying about this kind of thing, but I think that we should just be aware that computer programs do whatever they're taught to do, and they do them very well. Yeah. So you just have to be careful with what it is you're coding.
Yeah. Yeah. And
they don't sleep, and they run really fast.
Yeah. And as shown with the Microsoft AI, can learn rapidly and evolve rapidly. Mm-hmm. So they say
children learn what they live. And if you think about that AI, as silly as it is,
poor AI,
that poor thing, oh, I know, right?
God, but it, the vitriol it, with which look you what lived it, in 24 hours.
Exactly. The poor thing. But I mean, that's what happens, right? And if you have a neural network that gets manipulated, I guess you say, by bad agents.
Yeah.
Just like we talked about it in the first part of the show tonight. That's what can happen, you know? And so, let's treat our computer programs well and have them think about, maybe we can teach computers to have radical empathy.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I'm sorry. I was just watching Age of Ultron earlier today, and that's where some of that came from. When he just goes, just snaps and goes crazy and goes, so why do you call him, sir?
lots of questions.
Because he's my creator. That's why I call him sir. Mm.
wow.
Yeah, you know, and it. At what point will we hit the humanity is like a virus? You know, the Matrix point where, you know, are we living in illusion? Is it that?
That's great questions.
So
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think we're living in illusion. I don't think.
I kind of don't think so either.
I hope not. I have way too much.
I'm enjoying myself. Yeah. Even if I'm a simulation, I'm still enjoying myself.
I've worked pretty hard for what I have, and to think that's an illusion would just be soul crushing, dude. And be like, okay, it's really all pointless now.
It does kind of lead you towards wanting a particular worldview. It would be rather disappointing if you found out that someone could just hit, you know, reset on you. That would stink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but, some of the other amazing stuff that I saw recently was, of course, the Defense One article saying that we can now control drones with like headbands, with brain waves. We can control drones remotely.
Of course we can.
So that's pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, you're getting a little closer to the, the name escapes me. you know what movie I'm talking about, where the kid is basically he winds up leading this raid against a bunch of aliens. He thought it was a simulation and it wasn't. Ender's Game.
Oh yes.
Yeah. You get closer and closer to Ender's Game.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Control it with your mind. Somebody could lay a simulation on top of it and look like it's nothing, and then find out that you just murdered, you know, an entire village of children. Yeah,
in your augmented reality state.
Yeah, can happen.
Yeah,
if you had some dastardly evil person that decided they wanted to change what you were looking at. Yeah, absolutely, that stuff could happen.
So you're not a fan of the automated weaponry idea?
Not a fan. No.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, there are, of course, many watchdog groups out there right now that are putting that forward with the UN, trying to stop automated weapons.
I think if you're going to have automated weapons, why don't you just have like battle drone and you put your automated weapons inside of a room with other people's automated weapons and then let that be the battle.
Let the nerds decide the fate of it all.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, what are you going to have? Terminator versus a child? That's just not going to happen.
Bots.
Well, I mean... Yes, basically. You bring your bots, we bring ours, and it's for the fate of humanity. You know, of course, that's not a good idea, but I mean, it's better. It would be better to have them fight that way.
We'll just stuxnet all of them and win.
Ooh, man, throwing a little NSA love out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd much rather see robots fight robots than watch people be murdered like they are now.
Yeah.
Live on television. A remote drone cam. People do to each other. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's mind-numbing sometimes to look around. Like I said, and they're still up on screen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven stories about human trafficking within a week.
And those are the ones that popped up to the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a messed up world out there, and you know, you gotta find a way to love each other.
Yeah.
Find a way.
Well, and what can people do locally? What can they do in their schools? What are some resources that they can go to? Where can they go to find out more about the awesome new One Generation program by REEF, the Radical Empathy Education Foundation?
It's a great question. So we have a simplified URL, so you don't have to type the long one out, but it's REEF Cares, REEFCARES.org
.com. Hey, that's your hashtag.
It's our hashtag. It's our Twitter handle. It's our Facebook thing.
Bring it in.
Our
YouTube. Way to...
It's all tied together, but we're really trying to show that we care. So, lots of really good questions about what to do. We have we have some educational resources you can download, and those are the core information that we actually use for our educational programs. You can download that. It takes you to all sorts of sites that'll teach you about any type of human trafficking, labor trafficking, sex trafficking. It teaches you about the law. It's things that we've had some very, very smart people compile. The lady that put it together, she's a lawyer. She's worked, I think she's still working with International Justice Mission. She's worked with Polaris. And the thing is that there don't seem to be a lot of resources like that all collected together, kind of like the information overload. So we put them all in one place. And instead of keeping it to ourselves, we decided to let you download it as a PDF and you can share it with other people. There's a page on there that's called Know the Signs. And if you click on that, there's an enormous list of ways that you can kind of like evaluate if what you're seeing may be trafficking or what may be happening to you may be trafficking. And I don't want to go into tons of details, but it's all broken down into sections, whether it's about you know, sex, money, psychologically, whether you're being physically or emotionally abused. And so after you look at that giant list at the bottom, there's a whole bunch of resources, everything from the National Human Trafficking Hotline to Department of Homeland Security, missing children's, suicide prevention. We have a number of numbers and resources you can get to from that. But basically, do the reading, do the research. And if you need help and you can't find it any other way, those numbers are a great place to go. And one last thing I'll say about that is, that was probably never the last thing I'll say about it, but one final note that I would have in particular is that, this
is if you see someone that you believe is being trafficked, do not try to intervene. You need to talk to a professional. If you decide you're going to insert yourself into that,
great advice.
You may get hurt or killed, or the person that you're trying to help may get hurt or killed. So it's a super dangerous thing. And then depending on the size of your city or town or village, I come from a village. So depending on the size of the place, you may or may not be able to trust your law enforcement. So it's like you have to be really careful and know, you know, do I talk to, you know, my parent, my teacher, my priest? Do I talk to law enforcement? Do I go straight to the top, or do I start at the bottom? There's a million ways to look at it. Unfortunately, this is such an endemic problem in so many levels of society that there's not like one answer. And that is another part of what makes this really difficult. And tiny story aside, was I spoke to one survivor, and she reported this stuff to the police. The police found out about it, and they were unwilling to do anything about it. And she was like, you understand, this person did this to me. It's a real thing. It's really happening. And the sheriff just said, you know, look, I've got a family too. And you were like, what? And he was afraid to do anything about it. And, you know, that's what we're looking at here. This is an enormous issue. And I appreciate you asking that question and giving me the opportunity to put that out there. Cause this is there's not one answer.
It runs deep. People don't realize that it runs into local and state and federal politics.
Yep.
It runs into branches of education.
Yep.
It runs all through your community, folks, and it is a nasty, horrible cancer on our society that we really have to raise awareness on. The only way to do anything about it is to bring it to the forefront.
Yep. Prevention, education, awareness, and self-realization that this is occurring is the only way we're going to stop this. You have to stop the supply.
Yeah.
You're never going to stop somebody in a white panel van from grabbing somebody, but you can stop people from having this happen to them slowly or in a secret way. If you know what to look for and you are, try to find the right way to report it if you see it. Absolutely. And there's not a simple way, which is the worst part. I wish there was an easy way.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, as always, for coming on the show, breaking down this fantastic information, the great programs that the Radical Empathy Education Foundation is doing. Make sure to go online and check everything out at reefcares.org, everyone. The One Generation Program, if it is a program that you would like to bring to your local school, that you would even like to have at your local parish, that you would like to have put on at your local church or community center. Mm-hmm. Get in touch with Reef. They go everywhere and talk about this. They go on the local news, all kinds of things.
I do want to put one thing out there.
Go ahead.
We need funding. Yeah. I don't beg often, but I will tell you that after my experience last week,
imperative.
Oh no, I am at this point where maybe the word is begging, because when I see these kids and I look directly into their eyes and, you know, they are pleading for help. They don't know what to do. They no one's told them. And when I've seen this happening, with that group of kids earlier, I'm just like, I have to do anything I can. So here's my suggestion. If you're still listening, go to reefcares.org, go to our donate page, click on the PayPal button, and give us $2 a month. Give us $5 a month. It doesn't have to be a lot of money, but if I have regular monthly income, it can help me balance our budget and I can make plans around it. $2 a month, $5 a month. And of course, if you're feeling it more, but monthly is better than one giant chunk. Yes. Although I will take giant chunks too.
But chunks are good too.
But the small stuff matters. I mean, we need gas to take this thing to places. You know, there's every little expense in the universe. We've built the software. We're working on the educational
stuff. Facebook ads cost money. All this stuff costs money.
Running a Facebook donation, have you ever looked into that? So let's say you run a fundraiser on Facebook. It takes 90 days before any of that money gets to your bank account.
Yep.
And you have to raise over $100 before they'll even let the money go to you.
Yep.
And it's great because it's Facebook and it can help and it's a big reach, but dude, don't go to Facebook. If you hear me saying PayPal, please use PayPal. We get the money instantaneously.
Yes.
And we have some sustaining donors right now that, absolutely help keep the lights on. Just the few that we have, they pay for our web hosting.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like that big of a deal.
It doesn't, but it is. It is.
Yeah, it's when I'm paying,
you don't have to worry about.
Oh, I pay $5 a month for every email address that we have.
Yeah,
and I've had to cut it back because, look, you know, I've got other things I need to spend money on than a whole bunch of email addresses. So please help us.
Yes, and you can absolutely find Reef on the Dudes and Beer website, dudesandbeer.com. We'll absolutely throw up a donate. You send me a copy of your donate button.
Thanks, man.
We'll make sure to put it up there because nice. Y'all are one of the causes that we have listed on the website that we truly believe in. You're doing great work out there, and the work that y'all are doing with youth to raise this awareness and to provide the educational materials is absolutely amazing, and you need more.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate
the world
that.
Needs more Billy Joe Canes and more Reef foundations out there. So thank you for everything that you're doing. And thank you, everybody, for listening, as always. Keep tuning in. Keep checking out the live feeds. Keep checking out the Dudes and Beer Facebook group. Invite friends. It's open. It's free. It costs nothing. You come be part of the conversation. It's Facebook. Until next time, everybody, remember, if you can't be good, be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Take care of yourselves and each other.
All right, bye-bye. Peace.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.